Greetings, Odysseans. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, a fellow Odyssean and the editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine. Today we're taking a look at a brand new character in Odyssey and the voice talent who brought him to life.
Dr. Aston Liebernus, a professor at Campbell College, is portrayed by voice actor Jameson Price in next month's club adventure, The World of Whittonia.
And if the name Jameson Price sounds familiar in Odyssey, it's probably because he played several parts in BTV Trinity.
Jameson's back again with a slightly more sinister role in this adventure. I got to talk to him about recording this episode. Jameson, welcome to the podcast. I understand we had quite a time finding a gap in your schedule.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, I'm pretty busy, which is a good thing. I have multiple careers and irons in the fire, and this was a particularly busy time both for the technical theater work that I do, as well as multiple voiceovers.
Yeah.
It's like trying to figure out how to fit this all together. So,
is it true that you're working on a commercial today?
Oh, actually, I'm not. My son is.
Your son is. That's right.
Yes.
We're going to get to that. We're going to talk a little bit about your kids, too.
We are going to get to that. They are working professionals.
Oh, right. Well, your role as Professor Liebernus in The World of Whittonia is actually your second appearance on Adventures in Odyssey. You also voiced several wacky characters in BTV Trinity. How is it different performing more cartoonish characters versus playing a more realistic or dramatic role?
Well, when you play more cartoony stuff, I mean, you're kind of... you still want to have it grounded in reality, because otherwise it just kind of exists in a kind of a weird imagination space. So you try to ground it in some sort of real character, but then just push, you know, one element or another to an extreme. But it's kind of, I don't want to say one-note-y, but you are pushing kind of one or two things to an extreme level, whether it's the pitch of your voice or the speed at which you speak or something of that sort. When you're playing a more realistic character, there's more colors to paint with. It's more subdued to a certain extent. You're not pushing one element more than another, and you try to use all the stuff that we use naturally. There's a lot more things to play with, I guess, when you're playing a more realistic character.
Now, I would think the writing has a lot to do with that, too, because probably for cartoon, you're going to get something that's a little bit more... cartoonish, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you know, Adventures in Odyssey isn't your only job as an actor. You're a busy guy, as you mentioned. Looking at your resume, I noticed a wide range of experiences across media.
Yes.
How would you compare working with Adventures in Odyssey to, you know, other creative teams that you've collaborated with?
What's really wonderful is the ensemble recording. I do a lot of video game work, anime, the Japanese animation, live action films for Netflix. Now is doing tons of that work, but other companies as well. Often for those, you have a director and an engineer. Sometimes there'll be a producer involved, but then it's you in a booth by yourself, and you're watching a picture, and you're trying to honor the performance of the actor that you're replacing the voice of. For Adventures, I mean, we're creating our own things, but we're in a room together, and as an actor, that is so nice to be able to play off of other people and to see each other and to actually talk to each other, which is
a bit
of a wonderful thing to have happen.
Well, many of our actors do the solo voice work in a booth, as you just mentioned, but their experience is a little bit different, because so often they tell us what they do is they will record the voices first and have no idea exactly how it's going to play later. But you just described something I'd like to unpack a little bit more, and that is that you are watching a finished product, essentially, and you are doing an English version of that. So can you describe a little more what goes on with that?
Yeah, and it's called dubbing or ADR work. I started back in the 90s doing anime, and it's an interesting talent, but I figured out how to synchronize or sync my words to the mouth flaps that the animated character is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we see it. It's a translator has first translated the lines and keep the meaning, but adapt the words and try to make them line up with all of those lip flaps, which is a phenomenal job. I don't know how they do that. That being said, sometimes we have to make adjustments in studio where I may speak faster or slower or something. So I'm walking into this many times kind of not knowing what I'm working on or who I am. voice acting tends to be incredibly improvisational in that manner. And sometimes there's other video games, there's secret projects, and you don't know. They don't tell you. And then you have to kind of figure out, am I a good guy? Am I a bad guy? Do I like the person I'm talking to? With regards to dubbing, you are trying to memorize the line that you've never seen before as quickly as possible. Get that in your brain. You are watching the flaps, the mouth flaps of the character. And they also give you time codes because everything is timed out. So you know when you're supposed to start and when you're supposed to stop. Now, the other little beeps that they give you, they goes beep, 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 and then you start on the imaginary fourth beep. But so you have a rhythm that you start in. But then you kind of know I'm going from time code 10 to time code 15. I have 5 seconds to say this line, and I have to fit it in with those little mouth flaps. So it's kind of having three eyes.
Wow.
Look at the line, you look at the flaps, and you look at the time code, and then you act on top of that.
So there's the art history of it, and there's the technical nature of it, which sounds really complicated.
It is very complicated, and there are some really fabulous actors who can't synchronize all that together.
Your character in The World of Wetonia has a very unique accent, sort of Eastern European, is that?
I believe, I was trying to recall how we got there. But you're right, it is vaguely Eastern European. It's one of these things where we don't want to say, oh, he's from Russia, from Bulgaria, he's from Transylvania, whatever. It's a bit of an exotic feel, kind of a little mysterious. I mean, for us, there's a little bit of villainy involved,
still
in the Eastern European stuff. So it's flirting with that and using different elements of different accents so that it's not, oh, that's that. It's, ooh, where's he from?
Right.
That's what we want to hear.
A little bit of curiosity. Well, you know, it's very different from the voices that you used in BTV, that is for sure. Well, Phil Lawler wrote and directed this episode. What did he tell you about your character?
It's interesting. I'm trying to remember originally, because, of course, you know, my questions are, is he good? Is he evil? And then the first Wetonia thing they explored, I was like, oh, okay, I'm the evil guy here. And he's like, yeah, look at your name. I'm like, oh.
That's right. Rearranged the letters in Aston and
deconstructed my name. And I'm like, okay, I get it now. But, you know, I don't want to play ultimate evil. So there's an element of where's the good in that, in Professor Leibniz? And is there good? And why is he doing? What is he doing? So, I mean, a lot of it comes from the name. And then he also just kind of lets me run.
You were inside the booth, so you weren't able to hear it. But, of course, I was in the control room. And there were times when you would sort of wrap your voice around certain lines in a very rather delicious way. And you'd hear the guys would just be laughing. Phil would be chuckling because he would appreciate, we got the right guy for this, you know. We got the right guy.
Oh, so good. There is, you're right. There's a deliciousness and a relishing of the lines that Leibniz has, that it provides kind of that essence of a little bit of mystery and possible evil, but there's a deliciousness going on.
Yeah, maybe more mischief than evil right at this point, but yes, certainly the capacity is there.
Yes.
Well, you know, some actors create a backstory for their character to help them feel a greater connection. Do you commonly do that?
If I can do backstory, I do. It's very helpful as an actor to kind of just layer in subconsciously what backstory you can.
Mm-hmm.
Within something like this, I get little tidbits of like, ooh, here's something new that I've, you know, found out about, you know, Leibniz.
Yeah. One of the challenges, or perhaps an opportunity, that you deal with when you're recording Family Style with the other actors in the room is you're probably hearing them and maybe playing off of them differently than you would if you were just in a booth by yourself creating your own lines. Pemberton, who plays Renee, did an awful lot of scenes with you. Did you find that when you got into the studio with Amy that her performance maybe affected the way that you portrayed Leibniz?
Oh, very definitely. Amy is so much fun to play off of. She's got a fantastic voice, and it's just a delightful person to play with. So, you know, just throwing things back and forth, and she'll start with a certain energy, and so I can come right back in with that, whether I have to top her, go higher than she is, or undercut and come lower, and then she'll respond in kind. It is wonderful to have an actual person there to work with. It's just fantastic.
Well, you've been doing this for a long time, and obviously have been very successful. What drew you to this as a career, as a vocation?
Well, I've been acting all my life. I kind of started, I think it was the fourth grade. That was not professional. But that was kind of when the acting bug began to bite, I suppose, was doing living history of sort of National Park, and people would come to it, and then we would portray people from history.
Right.
Hence the name, Living History. And that was really a lot of fun. So it was my first professional jobs were in that.
So what are some of the historical figures that you remember portraying?
The Marquis de Lafayette from the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the most famous one, I suppose, in that little group.
Well, you know, you've done a lot of different types of acting. You just described one. Of course, we've done the voice acting. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
If you could only do one or the other, if you, someone forced you to make a choice, would you do voice acting or would you do things that were out front?
Oh, that is so difficult. They're fun in their own different ways. I mean, I'm getting older now, so the voice acting is easier on my body, shall I say? When you're on camera, it's a lot of getting up very early, going through makeup and standing around and waiting for lighting to get set and kind of keep yourself in your acting mode. And then you just go, 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 stop. Okay, redo the lights. You have to sit there and try to stay in the moment, stay in the moment. Voice acting, you can do it in your pajamas. But so I guess, I mean, I would have to say at this point in my life, I think I would have to pick the voice acting.
Yeah. Well, Jameson, you've got two children who have decided in one way or another to follow in your footsteps. When they told you that they wanted to be actors, how did you respond to that?
Well, to a certain extent, you always discourage someone from joining the acting community, if possible. It's not an easy life. Most actors don't make a living, which is kind of awful. My daughter, who's now 24, I mean, she was doing dance and singing and stuff from a very young age. Not only was she good at a very young age, but she had a presence of mind. She ended up here at Cal State Long Beach, where my wife works and where my wife and I met. And she fell into the movement instructor there was doing something kind of like the Cirque du Soleil clowning stuff, but it's partner work. The three of them, the instructor and my daughter and a friend of hers that she met in class, have formed a company. And they took that on tour to Edinburgh. Yeah, the Fringe Festival there, and have gone San Diego, Colorado, up in Canada. My daughter's actually in Canada now for her third tour of Fringing.
Wow.
My son, because he saw his sister doing all this work, when he was 8, he was in 3 different productions of Oliver. So he wanted to get into business. We started him with basic like student films and things that are available here in Los Angeles. That has stood him in really good stead. He is comfortable on a stage, and he's also comfortable in front of the camera, and he's comfortable in front of the mic because, of course, he's been working with me. Today, he's doing, I guess it's a video game trailer that he's working on. I can't say anything about it because it's confidential kind of stuff.
I understand.
They sign us to all kinds of, you can't talk about anything. But it's been a lot of fun. And he seems to, this is what he wants to do. It's wonderful. And he's got a fire in his belly for it. So that's good to see.
Well, the apple is not falling far from the tree.
No.
Well, this actually brings us, Jameson, to today's
TRQ.
And that sound means it's time for a totally random question from one of our fans. Jello. It's from Jello. Jello wants to know, what is your most irrational fear?
Oh, my most irrational fear. Spiders is probably really high up on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if there's one that would top that. It's interesting when you have children, you have different fears. The fears become less about you and more about them.
Very true.
I guess irrationally it would have to be spiders because spiders are not bad creatures. They are very good and help us with insects and things. And now I try to relocate them. But if one crawls on me, it's still like, ah! You run into the spider web as you walk out of the house, and you do the spider web dance.
Well, if they mention that to the writers, maybe Aston Lieberness will have
great.
Some sort of...
We
can incorporate that somehow. Well, I want to thank Jello for that question. Speaking of our fans, they will be interested to know that we just recorded a second episode with you will feature Aston Lieberness in the club next season. So he will be back.
Yay.
Well, we have had some really memorable bad guys on the show that have become fan favorites. Earl Bowen as Dr. Regis Blackard, David Selby as Jebediah Skint. I don't know. It kind of feels like you could be next.
Well, I hope so. He's a fun villain to love. And those are the most fun villains to play. It's someone that you know is not a nice person, but you can't help but like them in a certain way. It's wonderful when you can have a character that allows you to try to bring in and draw in the audience and have them like you, even though they know you're the villain.
Well, I'm not sure what the writers have up their sleeves, but I, for one, do hope we can find more storylines involving Aston Lieberness. It's always great to have you in the studio. Jameson, it's been a pleasure getting to know you just a little bit today. Thanks so much for squeezing us in.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Great job on the interview, Bob.
Thanks, Jesse. Did you like that one part about that thing that happened with the person in the place?
Oh, yeah. It was even better than the section where you talked about that other really important incident.
Do you think we're doing a good job hiding the fact that we're recording this part of the podcast before I've done the interview?
Yeah, you know, I doubt anyone will ever notice. The wonder of editing, huh?
You can hear Jameson's first appearance in the adventure BTV Trinity.
It's on album 66, Trial by Fire, and it's available in the club now.
And of course, Jameson stars in The World of Wetonia. Let's hear a preview of that adventure.
This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club, Renee creates a new program in the Imagination Station.
You've created people.
Renee's creations seem familiar.
Andras, Kyria, this is Mr. Whittaker.
Hi there.
Greetings, Mr. Whittaker.
But trouble comes when Renee shows her new world to a college professor.
Get to the more exciting parts.
Exciting parts?
Conflict.
Explore the world of Wetonia this month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
You can listen to Dr. Lieberness and Wit and Renee and everyone else starting September 1st in the club.
I'll be listening. But that's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation to Focus on the Family.
You can join the club at AIOclub.org. You can check out the podcast at witsend.org/podcast. Or feel free to give us a call at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day's an adventure.
Focus on the Family and Adventures in Odyssey present the Imagination Station Books, an exciting series for readers ages 6 and up. Through Wit's greatest invention, young readers will travel to the Colosseum in ancient Rome and a longboat in Greenland.
I am Eric the Red.
The Viking.
And there's so much more. When you visit theimaginationstation.com, you can find study guides and devotionals, plus fun family activities. More information at theimaginationstation.com or 1-800-A-FAMILY.